What's up, everybody? Welcome to PSI Love You XOXO, episode 68. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the lead singer of the Spin Doctors, Colin Moriarty.
You're about to break into Jimmy Olsen's blues over here.
I think that's what I want to, I've decided what I want to do, my 2017 New Year's resolution, is to change it up for you every time now. It's been, how many years have I been doing Pride of Long Island, or He Only Does Everything?
I don't know. Feels however like many forever. Years it's been too long.
Exactly. It's time to shake it up. A new one every time I say now.
Yeah, you're very loud. I forgot. Kevin, I just want to consult with you one more time, because I haven't seen Greg in, I don't know, like a month. Was that louder than usual, or am I just not acclimated
Kevin
properly?
Kevin is frantically trying to turn on his microphones to make sure.
I think that you're lacking the...
He's been off too long. He's been
I've been in like a hyper... What do they call it?
Hyperbolic chamber.
No, it's not hyperbolic. Is it a hyperbolic chamber? It's a chamber of hyperbole? I guess that is where I live, actually. I do live in a hyperbolic chamber.
You figure it's... I've let it build up too
hyperbaric,
long.
I think it is.
Hyperbaric chamber?
I think something like that.
Okay. Think about it this way, where it's like every day we were out here fucking swinging, doing all these shows, right? It's been two solid weeks of not doing anything. I've built up. I've been in Canada for one of those weeks where I couldn't be loud at all. Every time I talked, they told me I was too loud in there. It's true. They're quiet people.
Fuck them.
I know, right? I mean, they were all worried about avalanches in the mountains. I was being so loud, they said. They didn't know what they were talking about. They're nothing up to anything. Colin, we're back. 2017 is here. The first thing we've ever recorded in 2017 is right here.
Yeah.
Are you excited? You ready for another year of this?
Oh, man.
Hold my hand.
Here we go. Let's jump off the cliff together.
We're just going like when we, just like when we fucking started the business. Hold your hand and jump. Colin, did you know that listeners and viewers can go to kindoffunny.com/PSQ to get their questions read in the air just like Nathan Choquette did? Thank you for spelling out your last name. Nathan writes in and says, "Hi, guys. No super detailed questions here, but I was curious how your breaks went. Did you get to make your way through a bunch of backlog games in between spending time with loved ones, or did your systems end up silently waiting for you to return from your holiday? Love your work and happy New Year to you both. Your friend, Nathan Choquette. P.S. It's totally up to you, but would you mind giving my best bro, Michael, a birthday shout-out? He's turning 25 on the day this episode releases, and he loves you guys, too." No, we won't do that. What'd you do over break?
I did a lot of things. I went to Mexico.
Yeah? You're going to talk about that in the Game Over Greggy show, you said?
Yes.
I'm excited about that.
So that was interesting. And then came home, and I was home for, I don't know, from like the 22nd until now.
Yeah. How many hours were in pants, you think? Were you mainly pantsless?
Oh, my God. Like, almost... I was pretty much never
just when
pants.
You went to
there
the
were
diner?
Days where I never even left. Oh, yeah, I went to the diner.
I saw that Aaron was Snapchat... Or not Snapchat. Instagram Snapchatting. Stories, whatever you want to call it. She was doing that.
I'm too old for that.
She was watching people do that.
I played some games, and I read, and I watched TV, and caught up with the sports, and played with Lola, and... I don't know.
How did the writing
bassoon?
Go? This is the first time we've talked. You played the crystal bassoon a bit.
Oh, like every day.
Oh my gosh.
Like five times a day.
It's constant. It's like one of those helmets with the beers and the straws. It was just one giant crystal bassoon.
Yeah.
What I want to know is how did the writing go? I haven't talked to you at all. You were originally going to write a lot in Mexico, and then I saw you put up the tweet about your New Year's resolution. Write.
Yeah, the idea is in full.
Did you get a lot of work done?
Yeah. So a lot of it, I mean, I wrote quite a bit, but the idea is solidified, and it's good to go. Awesome. I think the idea is great. Like, I really do.
I like it,
and I'm stoked to see.
No dramatic changes since I last heard about the idea.
No, okay. Not really. And cool. So that's
you, listener viewer. You're not missing anything. You don't know what this idea is yet. Colin's not shown his cards, but he's been hinting around at it.
I'm not going to show any cards until it's time to go. But
what you should do is not ever release it. And have a whole fucking novel series. And then when you die, Lola's grandbabies get all that money when they start publishing those books.
It's like Chinese democracy. Mm-hmm. Take 15 years. So I'm aiming for the middle of the year to have something for people, not like the listeners, but like people like close to me to start to look at. I'm stoked with the idea. A lot of it was just spent on the beach and like on, you know, like just like writing in notebooks, like fleshing out characters and stuff like that. And I'm excited about it. And it's basically my massive priority this year, is to finish this. I've always wanted to write a book, and I've had opportunities presented to me in the past to write books. And for, you know, one reason or the other, one I pursued quite vehemently for a while, and it's still actually in the air. I haven't talked to the guy in a while from the publisher. I guess so. He's a really nice guy. He actually listens to the show. Works in a major publishing house, and he and I had been going back and forth for some time since I was at IGN, but I just can't find the time to write that particular book right now. Mm-hmm. I'd like to work with him in the future. And then some, you know, a guy that publishes fiction had reached out to me a little while ago, but I think I want to just go this alone and just see like how it goes. Sure. And I'm open to any and all opportunities, obviously, but this is always something I've wanted to do. I want to do something that I feel like, not that what we do doesn't mean something or like the things we've done in the past don't mean anything, but I want to do something that's like, I've always wanted to have my name on a book.
Sure.
You know, and that's like a huge dream of mine. So I hope that works out. So yes, it went very well, and it's difficult work to do, and hopefully it comes out at some point in the future.
Well, I wish you luck.
I don't lose my nerve. Thank you.
Let me know how I can help. Question here. What'd you do about gaming though? You had a whole bunch. We both had not aspirations, not dreams, but we had plans. Things we wanted to do. I saw you platinum.
We didn't have dreams because that game's never going to come out.
Hey, it's in this fucking video. It's confirmed. The hell it is.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. What did you platinum Hitman Go?
I platinum Hitman Go very early on in the break. Sure. I've been working on that one for like 8 months. I really like that game a lot.
Hitman Go is great.
I moved on to Lara.
I
moved on to Lara Croft Go, which I think is a significantly inferior game.
Inferior.
Yeah, and you were. You were saying 5 to 7 second load times on that game. It's a joke. No offense. Maybe multiply that by 4 or 5 and you get the... Lara Croft Go on Vita is perhaps the worst optimized game I've ever played on that
Loads
device.
Like shit.
Period. I can't believe that they released it in that shape. And it's frankly embarrassing. They should have just not even released it on Vita. Mm-hmm. For a game that requires so much touch and go and so much like trial and error, way more than Hitman.
Yeah.
To literally wait 25 or 30 seconds for the game to load. And that's literally 25 or 30 seconds to load. Go to a map, loads forever. Go to back to the menu, takes forever to load. It's like, who the fuck optimized this game for Vita? And why does Hitman Go run so much better than this game? Yeah. This isn't a technical behemoth. Killzone Mercenary runs just fine on Vita. So that annoyed me a little bit. Nonetheless, I platinumed it.
Yeah.
But I found it to be a way.
Did you ever jump over to PlayStation 4?
No, Aaron was playing it there, and it runs way better.
That
there.
Was the problem. Is that I played Hitman Go without any comparison. When I was just playing at the coffee shop, I was like, "Oh, this is fun. These loads suck, but whatever. I'm doing this. I'm texting somebody. I'm doing the whatever." And then when I went home and saw it on PlayStation 4, I was like, "Oh, why the fuck would I ever play it on Vita again?"
It's incredibly fucking annoying on Vita. Yeah. Like I'm just throwing it out there, but I stuck with it. I'll tell you, I sure did. I couldn't wait for it to be over. There, like halfway through the game, I'm like, I got it. I've come this far. I need to get this over with. 32% of the people that played have a platinum. I can't possibly not be one of the people.
Sure.
So I played that. I played a Vita game called Bard's Gold quite extensively.
I played it. I didn't like it. It didn't work for me.
I liked it a lot.
It looked a lot. It's what we were talking about on our top 10 list about Rogue Legacy. A lot of Rogue Legacy feel in that game in terms of dying, come back, doing it. Isn't exact. And that was the thing where it was a bit too stiff for me. Why'd you like it?
It's obtuse. Yeah. But just the right amount of obtuse. So the idea is that there's like these four worlds. Each world, I think, has 7 stages. And you're just going through somewhat randomly generated stages, but they're kind of similar to each other in each of these worlds. I just found it quite satisfying. The cool thing is that you find these like secret books. You have to do like really obtuse and strange things to make them appear. So like I think it's like world 2-1, if you beat world 2-1 with a weapon you bought from the shop, and world 2-2 if you get all the way through it, then a monster appears, you kill the monster, then like a treasure chest appears.
Is this something you have to read online to figure all this out?
Yeah, I figured out something about myself, and then I realized that this shit was happening randomly, and I went online and looked.
Figured out what they're doing.
And these books allow you to upgrade your character, and your character becomes like super powerful. Is able to do a lot of things. So you have like the ability to for range with your dagger, you have ability to have more health or you know, whatever, move quicker, whatever it is. And so I liked it. I mean, I played the game and instantly knew that this game is going to be a major turnoff for lots of people, but it reminded me of older games that I really liked that just keep you coming back for more and more. It has the same kind of hook that Downwell had for me in the sense that it's not nearly as hard as Downwell. But
you're not good at it yet?
Yeah, where it's like it shouldn't be this hard. But I on the plane to and from Mexico and in Mexico when I was playing Vita, that's basically all I played.
Interesting.
And I really, really liked it a lot. And the major game that I spent time with over the break when I got back from Mexico was Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Ah, yes.
Now, the specific reason that I wanted to, that I frankly thought it was a mistake and didn't want to do our Game of the Year video before the break is because I knew I was going to be playing things or at least something that was going to mix that list up. And Rise of the Tomb Raider is one of those games. Hmm. And so, you know, my list that's going to go up, I think the same day this goes up for everyone on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames is already inaccurate, but that's the name of the game, I guess. Rise of the Tomb Raider is exceptionally good.
Yeah, and, I told you.
And I played it for, I want to say, almost 30 hours at this point.
Are you going to platinum it?
Maybe. So, in terms of the trophies, the trophies are out of fucking control in the game. Like,
there's a million of
there's
them.
There's a million of them. I there was a point where I went in and just looked, and I had like 34 bronze trophies, and 22% of the trophies in the game. I'm like, what? And it's because all the DLC is in there, and that's fine. You don't need the DLC trophies to even get the platinum trophy. I just feel like even the general trophy list is just so bad. It's just such a bad list, especially with all the collectibles and all the cool things in the game. Nonetheless, as I tweeted out when I was playing it a little bit, the game is strongest when it's not trying to be Uncharted. I think the beginning of the game is totally ripping off Uncharted. And then when you settle into what the game actually is, you find that there's a lot of really unique and interesting ideas in the game that you know because you played it on Xbox. And I like that there's a lot to do, but it never seems super overwhelming. Like, there's just enough to do. I like that she learns languages, and I like that she finds survival caches and documents and relics. All the relics have stories, and the documents really stress the story. And
it has that Ubisoft feel where when you get introduced to a new area, you start seeing things pop up, but it's not them popping up and there's 100 caches to go find or 100 gold coins to find. It's like, I could actually stop here, and that's what I did. Every time I entered a new area, you spent like an hour cleaning it out, getting the XP, doing all these things, learning whatever you can. And spamming survival instinct the whole time.
Yeah, that's really annoying as shit, but I think that it's, you know, you said it's like a Ubisoft game. I would dare say, with the exception of maybe the Far Cry games, it's better quality than Ubisoft's typical offerings. And Far Cry, I think, is like the pinnacle of what Ubisoft does in my mind. And I feel like there's just cool ideas there where, like, you wonder as an Uncharted fan, what would Uncharted look like with more the makings of a modern game as opposed to, like, a pulp game that's very... That would be very at home on PS2 in a sense, where it's like there's not much to do here. You're just going from point A to point B, and maybe there's some collectibles. What would this game look like if it was opened up and given some love and massage in a different way? And you actually have, you don't have to think about it, you have it. Rise of the Tomb Raider is that game. I will say that the story's not that interesting.
Of course.
And Naughty Dog absolutely destroys Crystal Dynamics in terms of character development, in terms of animations, in terms of pretty much everything that has to do with narrative and aesthetic. I don't think there's any competition there.
That's the same thing with the original Tomb Raider, right? In the fact that I can tell you how much I loved playing the original Tomb Raider. I can tell you how much I loved playing Rise of the Tomb Raider. I think the original Tomb Raider ended with me fighting a witch for some reason, and I can't tell you anybody in the game except the guy who had an escape button on his shirt, which is the same thing with Rise of the Tomb Raider, where that guy pops up, and they're like, oh, blah, blah, and I'm like, oh, was he in the first game? Like, I don't even fucking remember this dude. Whatever, go through, sure. And it's about, it's her and her father. Her father's like ghosts, really, that were I mean, like, narrative ghost.
Yeah, Lara's an interesting character. Yeah. The voice acting is really great. And I feel like they have something really special here. I think everyone already knows that. I think I'm the last of the party. But
yeah.
But although the game is apparently not selling very well on PS4. But I highly recommend it. I think that it really sucked me in. I got to almost to the very end, and then I actually have pulled back because I know you can play the game after you beat it, but I hate doing that. Like, I want to, like, collect everything and do everything and then go beat the game so I can be fucking done with it. But surely it's one of the great games that I've played in the year and would bump something off my list. And I had intended on moving on to other things. Like, I booted up a game called Dex on Vita for a little while. I got a code from it. Our friends at East Asia Soft, I think, are publishing it. Yeah. They're the guys that do, like, Rainbow Moon.
All right.
By the way, I got heard Rainbow Skies still coming.
Really? All right.
Yeah, Rainbow Skies in development, almost done. So if you guys are looking forward to that PS4, PS Vita sequel to Rainbow Moon, you won't be waiting too much longer, I don't think. Dex is like this this really neat looking Blade Runner like side scrolling role playing game.
Okay,
and no one had recommended it to me. And I was going through my spam over the break, and this email popped up. I'm like, well, this isn't spam, and I just asked for a code and I downloaded it. And the idea behind the game is really cool, but it just runs so badly on Vita. Mm. It literally lasted 5 minutes on my Vita before I'm like, I'm out. And then the other game I wanted to play was Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered. got a bad taste in my mouth when I booted it up and then I had to put the disc in for Advanced Warfare or whatever the fuck it is that I just played.
Infinite
Warfare. And then I played and I'm like,
can't go back.
Old game. Well, I mean, it's fine. It looks great, but I'm just like, I don't really want to play a shooter right now. I'm shootered out. So,
a huge year for shooters. Yeah.
Then I went to Rise of the Tomb Raider and then that's basically what I stuck with. So I think that's basically it. I played quite a bit over the break. I also want to give a shout out to a few other things I did.
Okay.
Started watching that show, Colony. Very good. Super Jericho-like. Think you'd like
it. Is this the one Aaron was talking about on Twitter that she was trying to figure out how to make you watch
it?
How'd she make you watch it?
She just put it on the television and I watched it.
Gotcha, that seems pretty easy. Seems like she overthought the
problem. The plot's not like Jericho, but it's very Jericho-like.
Okay.
Which resonated with me, so I'm trying to work my way through that. Finished Man in the High Castle Season 2. Superb.
Okay.
Very, very good. Shout out to Man in the High Castle. She watched that show. And then I started watching Westworld. Just a couple episodes. It's fine.
Oh, wow.
I think the idea is really cool. Not sure I was in the right mindset to watch it. It reminds me of when I first watched Game of Thrones and I had to go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
Because I was like, man.
Didn't click.
Certainly an interesting and intriguing idea. So I got a lot done. And playing Rise of the Tomb Raider, set so deep in Soviet territory or post-Soviet territory. I'm reading a lot about the Russians lately as well.
Well, there's lots to talk about with the Russians lately. A lot of things to know about Alexander the First,
Nicholas the First, Alexander the Second, Alexander the Third.
You're going all the way back to catch up. See how you don't want to jump
too far back.
You don't want to jump into the Russian politics now. You want to see how
Russian history is fucked up, man.
Yeah.
It's like they had like serfdom until like the mid 19th century. It's just a very strange kind of.
If it ain't broke.
Very strange kind of thing. But interesting to read about them nonetheless.
Okay. Yes,
that's it. Okay. How about you?
I played a ton of Hue. Hue popped on the radar, this puzzle platformer thing, when GDC was coming around and I was booking GDC and they sent over the video of what the game was. And I was like, this is awesome. And put them on the GDC stream. I think you and Tim, somebody did it or whatever. And I was like, all right, cool. And when it came around, downloaded it on the Vita, had it ready to go. Had a stick. What are you laughing about?
I was just thinking about something. No, nothing. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
No, it has to do with the game, but I'll tell you after your story.
Okay, cool. And jumped into it, and it was one of those that I didn't know what to expect. This game, this 2D baseless side scroller with the puzzles or whatever. Puzzle games, it's always 50-50. If I'm going to get into it and like it, or if I'm going to be like, this is obtuse and I don't want to do this anymore. And the way Hue built upon itself was so much fun and so interesting and clever, I thought, where you're going through getting different parts of the color wheel. So the puzzles start off so simple. And then by the end of the game, when you have all the different puzzle pieces, that's when it's like, okay, now it's way more complicated. And how do I make all this work? But for the lion's share of the game, going through and solving all these different puzzles, I didn't have an issue. You know what I mean? I wasn't, if I got to a point and I was like, how do I do this? It wasn't frustrating. And at the end, I've petered out now where I finally jumped ahead. I mean, all the walkthrough videos, because nobody writes anything anymore. All the walkthrough videos, I have like 15 minutes left of the game, I guess, in terms of puzzles and stuff. I don't know if I'm going to get back to it though, because it's to the point of, I want to play it on planes. I want to play it when I'm on the go. I was playing on the couch in front of the fire and stuff. I'm to a point though, where it's just like, I jump in, I'm like, this is kind of frustrating. I don't want to sit here and stare at this screen for 15, 20 minutes trying to figure it out. Nor do I want to go watch a walkthrough video to do it. If it had a platinum, maybe. Maybe there'd be a sense of going through complete it. No real reason to, though. But I enjoyed it. I recommend it. I thought it was great. I think the puzzles are fun. Interesting. We talked about how bad the load times are on Lara Croft and that being like, oh, that's weird on Vita. I'm trying to think, and maybe you can help me. Do you know of a game on Vita where there's like significant frame rate drops where it just chugs all of a sudden? I started thinking when I had seen some, and it's not all the time. I'm talking, and it's not three-fourths of the way through the game, I ran into like two or three levels where it was like, well, I was playing, and I was doing these really complicated puzzles, and all of a sudden it was like, and I was like, I had to stop because quit out, close it, come back.
And then
back
it worked.
In. Yeah, and then it cleaned it all up, but I don't know if it was processing, pulling too much.
I don't know. Walking Dead didn't run well.
Yeah, but even that's like, frame rate hitches, I felt like, or like full like scene skips and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like it was loading something.
Yeah, I can't off the top of my head think of anything.
This was like that reached that. There's nothing like that going on, and then it just chugged out of the blue. It doesn't stop me from recommending it. I think it's really great, really fun. Maybe I'm sure at some point on a plane, I'm going to sit back down and jump back into those puzzles. I have no idea what the fuck I was doing, but yeah, it's totally just a fun puzzle game. I don't think the story is anything not that it matters, it's just a narrator, like, is you're reading a letter from your mom and stuff. Maybe, like I'm saying, it stays around too long, but I don't think so. I think it's just that the puzzles get to a point that I don't want to play. Played the first two episodes of Walking Dead season 3. It was interesting. No spoilers, of course. Well, I mean, spoilers for the fact of like what the basic part of the game is, right? That you're playing as a new character, Javier. You play as Clem in flashbacks. When they announced that it was going to be a new character in season 3 that you'd be playing, even though you'd get some Clem or whatever, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be into that or whatever. And I think it's actually really paying off well, where I like not having the baggage. It was interesting to jump into episode 1 and be making choices and not know 100% who this character was yet. So I could be a dick if I wanted to. I could, the really asshole-ish way that I never would have done with my Clem. And then to run into Clem in the story and see how that goes, what she's matured into, that's an interesting dichotomy too. And what's interesting is, again, no spoilers for how the game plays out, is the fact that, you know, you get into the regular Walking Dead choices of somebody's like, we need to do this. And then somebody else, we need to do that. But the person saying we need to do that this time is Clem. And so it's like that thing where I'm not listening to my family members and totally picking Clem over these other people, which is going to be interesting, I think. And as we go down the line, does that totally backfire and fuck me over? Because like Telltale, as we saw with the Batman game, I think has balls in terms of like fucking around with characters you love or whatever. Are they going to fuck around with what the core of my Clementine was? You know, I know what she's been from season 1 to season 2. I feel such a connection to that character. It's going to be interesting if the end, like if I'm just blindly following her, if that's like totally the wrong call and she's an asshole and she's just out for herself. I don't know. But I loved it. I had a great time. It's another game, you know, we just came off of Batman. We talked so much about Batman leaving, especially episode 5 and how poorly it ran. Wasn't having the frame rate hitches, the crashes, none of that shit in season 2. So, I mean, again, for the most part, that's how I've had Batman until episode 5. So we'll see if it's another thing where it seems like they're trying to catch up to a deadline and it all goes to hell. But
cool.
Really interesting. Excited one day to do a spoiler casty thing to talk about all the different choices and that. But again, it's cool not having a connection to people and being like, oh, let's do this and fuck that person over and whatever and see how that all plays out. And I thought it was weird to do episode 1 and 2. On day 1, were you following this?
I don't understand why they did that.
Weird thing. I don't understand it either. But the kicker cliffhanger for episode 2, I thought was really great, and I'm excited to see how that pans out.
Cool.
And then just started it after I finally washed my hands with Hugh. It was this Shanti half genie hero.
Oh yeah, I booted that up too. Yeah,
yeah. I was blown away. I was like, oh man, it looks great. You know, it's a side scroller platformer action game where I'm hitting opponents with my hair. It's got like that fast pace. It doesn't look like it, obviously, but it reminds me of Shovel Knight. And like, oh, this is like a callback to what we've seen before and where we've done this.
That's WayForward shit. So yeah. WayForward spawned. Yeah, people from WayForward spawned Yacht Club, and so the lineage of their games would be very similar. WayForward's always been
they've been a developer
very near and dear to my heart. They make some duds, but they make some great games too. The one game that they made that I think was like super underappreciated was that Bloodborne game, or not Bloodborne, Blood Rain. That was clearly and obviously supposed to be a Castlevania game at some point in its development. I don't have that authentically, but I would not be surprised.
Did you give Shantae a chance?
I played around with it a little bit, and I played the last Shantae game too on PS4.
Yeah,
I like it. Actually kind of like got turned not turned off from it, but
sure.
I like platinuming games like that, and there are trophies in that game that are really hard, and I want to wait for a trophy guide if one comes out, because there's one to beat it in 2 hours, which is probably fine, but then there's one to get everything in the game in 4 hours, and so I want to see how that all pans out I don't really want to jump into it. That was when I downloaded that and that Dex game at the same time, and then I just went back to Tomb Raider.
This is like one of those pleasant surprises where I'm like, I remember the PS4 game or the ones that have come before, because there's been other ones that I remember covering at IGN.
Shantae's been going for a minute.
And so jumping in, I was like, is this going to be like a JRPG that's been around for a while and I don't connect to anything and I don't know what's going on? Jumped in, I found the dialogue funny, the interactions funny. They're clearly playing with the comedy and stuff. The first boss battle where they, don't call him whatever, like poopy pants or whatever the hell. I was like, all right, that's pretty good. And like, it seems cool to jump out and then start upgrading and buying things from the shop and doing all this stuff. So
yeah, not that I can speak intimately on Shantae's history, which is longer than you'd think, but was disappointed that it was 2.5D.
Mm.
but it is very expensive to make. You know, that's a major difference between that game and Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight looks really beautiful. I really don't think Shantae looks beautiful.
I think it's pretty. I think it's pretty. It looks like a cartoon, which
it looks very. The 2.5D thing is becoming very generic in my mind. Like it's there's some games that I think do it really well. I think that Strider game that Capcom released like very early in PS4's life cycle is a good example of a game that looks great in that motif. And then I think there are games like Mighty No. 9, which is a fucking turd any way you cut it, but looks like garbage. There's a lifelessness to it that disappoints me, which was one of the concerns I had with Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night, which is Iga's game, and I have an early build of that game that was given to people that supported it. And as to be clear with the audience, I'm friendly with Iga and Ben.
He ate burritos at our house.
They did eat burritos at our house, and we are going to be in the game. So, and I'm working on that with them now. So, and by we, I mean kind of funny, like there's going to be team fat stuff in the game and stuff like that. So just throwing that out there.
Sure.
But when I played the build, I was quite, that fear was allayed. You have to massage that in a very specific way, because I just feel like there's a lifelessness and a lack of artistic merit to it compared to traditional, static, pixel backgrounds.
Sure. Yeah.
So,
and then final thing that I'll be playing tonight that I'm super excited to get home and put on the big TV is Gravity Rush 2.
Yeah, we had that. We got the code like 10 days ago.
Yeah. Well, we got notified we're going to get it. Yeah. And then got it like right. And I was like, all right, cool. That was as I was like going to New Orleans. I'm like, I can't do anything about this.
I'm good.
I know it's not for you. Exactly. Yeah. But like, I'm super stoked to jump in and play it. Review embargo. It will lift sometime before when I can talk about it on the next PS I Love You XOXO. So look for those impressions.
I am
week.
What was I going to say? Oh, shout out to Sony PR, though, in one specific way, the email for Gravity Rush 2's code, upside down.
I was like, all right, you're trying too hard. Come on. Can I just get the... Because my iPhone, I was able to lock it and rotate it, but then I needed to check something on the sheet today, and I was like, on my computer, I'm like...
It's cute. It's a nice idea.
It's whatever. You're trying.
Jake Jones, you son of a bitch.
Jake Jones, you sorry son of a bitch. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is PSI Love You XOXO. It is kindoffunny.com's PlayStation podcast, and it posts every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, rain or shine, on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe, where you've made it the number one PlayStation podcast in the world, and we thank you very much for that. If you're listening to this the day it posts on Tuesday or leading into Thursday, remember Kind of Funny's second anniversary is Thursday, January 5th. We will be streaming over on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to celebrate and doing a whole bunch of announcements and telling you where we're going for this year. It'll be super fun and exciting, so check that out. Colin.
Yes.
Let's begin the show with what is and forever will be Roper's Report. Time for some singular possessive news.
There are two items on the list.
What? A baker's dozen. God damn these breaks.
This goes back. So to be clear, because we have had an episode every week, even though we record it, we can them. The news goes from the December 26th to today, the 2nd, when we recorded this. And there are really only two things to talk about. So can't manufacture the news. I actually went to way more sources even than I usually do to see if I can find anything. And no dice. So number one, Sony has revealed the free games PlayStation Plus subscribers will have access to for the month of January 2017. And they are as follows. PlayStation 4 gamers will be able to download Day of the Tentacle Remastered, This War of Mine, The Little Ones, which is supposed to be very good, The Swindle, which is very good, and Titan Souls, which is very good, free of charge. If you're gaming on PS3, you'll get Blaze Rush and The Swindle for free. And if you're on Vita, you can play Day of the Tentacle Remastered, The Swindle, Asgen 2, and Titan Souls.
That's a good month.
It is.
I really like
people
Titan
are bitching
Souls.
About it. I'm like, I don't know what you're bitching
about.
People
bitch about everything.
So The Swindle is really cool.
I enjoyed that game.
Asgen 2 is like a match 3 game. Titan Souls is a boss rush game. It's got like Shadow of the Colossus kind of DNA in it. I think it's really fucking hard.
It's really hard, but that was a game playing on Vita where I remember booting it up on some trip we were going on, and it was a fun two flights of sitting there like, all right, shit, how do I do this? And then figuring it out, but still trying to time it correctly to do it.
Day of the Tentacle Remastered is not for me because I'm not a huge nerd, but a lot of you guys out there will like it. And then
This
War of Mine is supposed to be, it's like a survival kind of
game. I jumped in. It didn't click for me, but I can understand why so many people like it.
So there's that. So as of the time you're listening to this, these games should be free. So go check it out. Make sure to obviously check. Don't buy them on accident. Number two, the final piece of news. It appears that Detroit Become Human and from Quantic Dream and Dreams from Media Molecule are launching this year, at least according to a new trailer Sony released teasing 2017 launches on PS4. The other games included in the sizzle reel are Gran Turismo Sport, Hellblade, Drawn to Death, Nier Automata, Yakuza 0, Farpoint, which looks awesome, Uncharted the Lost Legacy, Matterfall, yeah, Gravity Rush 2, Wipeout Omega Collection, MLB The Show 17, Everybody's Golf, Pyre, Persona 5, Neo, World of Warriors, Next Machina, yeah, Knack 2, Parappa the Rapper, 20th Anniversary, Starblood Arena, and Horizon Zero Dawn. Don't get too excited, though. Shuhei Yoshida was asked on Twitter about the inclusion of two games, Dreams and Detroit, in the trailer, to which he responded their inclusion was a mistake. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
Come on now. When as soon as
I believe Detroit, but I...
As soon as that popped up and kids started tweeting me, I started drafting... I think I deleted it, but I started drafting the same tweet I did for Persona whenever he wanted to throw that in my face that I was going to be wrong with my prediction. And I was like, on January 1st, 2018, go ahead and show me those games in your hands. Show me that I was wrong, that they came out somewhere in the calendar fucking year of 2017. That's not happening. And even when... inevitably, there's going to be somebody who says at some point... And this is Greg talking for my prediction of Dreams and, well, not even Dreams probably, but for Detroit, where they will say 2017, it ain't happening. It's not coming.
That's that is it for the news.
That's short news.
Yeah.
Happens though.
Yeah.
That's weird though. We usually never end that quickly, you know? It's rarity.
Don't ask me for the drop either because they didn't write one this week. So I have no idea what's coming out.
God damn it.
I don't know if they're just not doing it anymore because this is like something has had to have come out the last few weeks, you'd assume.
Oh, there hasn't been enough the whole break.
There wasn't one when we recorded the last regular episode, I don't think. I'll go look. But I'm not seeing anything.
They're not going to retire the drop. It's just Christmas break for them too, or holiday break for them, where they take the 2 weeks off, I'm assuming like we do. I assume they have 2 weeks off.
I'm searching.
Ryan Clement somewhere bouncing his baby on his knee. Justin Massagill doing whatever the fuck he does. Sid Schumann doing pull-ups nonstop for 2 weeks. You're going to come back and be like, he was tall, and now he's jacked. And then he's going to punch Justin in the face.
It seems like the last drop was on 12-6. There wasn't a drop on the 13th, the 20th, the 27th, or the 3rd.
Coming the new year and the holidays, always hard to keep any kind of regularity.
Well, I'll tell you... You know, if you want these random games to sell even worse than they already are on PlayStation Network, you might as well not tell anyone they exist at all. If you're in the middle of the forest and a tree fall, you know, does the tree make any noise if no one's there to see it fall and hear it fall, Greg?
Well, you're like explaining, you're really getting into the weeds here. Yeah. Okay.
So if whatever fucking random ass shit's coming out that 5,000 people are downloading.
Yeah.
Well, now 2,000 people are going to download them because not even the drop is going to give them a...
Wow.
So my hope is that everyone is just on break and stuff because I like reading the drop. I get excited. On Sundays, I always go around noon to PlayStation blog while I'm watching football and
see what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And a special congratulations to the Houston Texans for making the playoffs again this year.
How does that make you feel?
Maybe they'll actually score this year in the playoffs. Probably not. Yeah. But, you know, congratulations to them. They couldn't have pulled a better team than the fucking Raiders, who are going to start their third string quarterback. And not since 1966, since the Super Bowl era, has a quarterback started a playoff game without ever started a regular season game before until right now. So there's your little piece of NFL knowledge for the day on PS I Love
there's
You.
There's a little piece of NFL. All right, then you want to jump to the topic of the show?
Sure.
Tots. This one comes from username Regret. Hey, Greg. And then he puts in parentheses, ignore Colin. He's sick of people waiting for you to say hi, I guess.
That's fine with me.
Do either of you feel like 2016...
Wait. You just said ignore Colin, and then you're asking the question, do either of us? I don't understand.
I mean, you can take it up with the username Regret or over on the Kinda Funny forums where he left this at kindoffunny.com/PSQ. Do either of you feel like 2016 has been a little disappointing on the AAA front? Or at least the major ones. 2016 has felt like the year of underdogs to me more than anything. Some of my favorite games were ones that I never expected to like so much. It's not often that a game like Inside could be doing so well in Game of the Year categories. Sure, Journey did it, but that's lightning in a bottle. 2013 had GTA 5 and Last of Us. 2015 was all Witcher 3, Fallout 4, and Metal Gear Solid 5. I can go on, so it's not unusual for smaller games to have some of the best ones. I don't know what that means. Uncharted 4 was shockingly somewhat of a disappointment for me. If you ignore Battlefield 1 and Overwatch 2 and Titanfall 2, the year feels kind of empty. That is, until you start looking at things under the radar. Some of the games people were really looking forward to were ones that already seemed obvious to me that were going to be disappointing, like The Division or No Man's Sky, even if they aren't terrible games. I'll remember 2016 for games like Stories, Path of Destinies, and all the tough choices and terrible endings I always get. I'll remember it for Fury and how it was the highest I ever made it on a leaderboard, 12th, because I just loved it so much. And some smaller, more emotional games like This War of Mine, The Little Ones, and the insane co-op fun of Helldivers, more than Uncharted 4. Do either of you feel this way too? I'd love to hear your response and for Colin to tell me how wrong I am about Uncharted 4. Parentheses, I'd give Uncharted 4 an 8.5, at least anyways, just not a 10 like 2 and 3. Thanks! Username regret. Colin, was it a disappointing year for AAA? And do your memories center more around indies?
No, I think there's a lot of hyperbole around 2016 in many ways. Like, the games were bad. Everything bad happened. A bunch of people died. Like, no one's ever died before. There's never been a time where bad games had come out. I just think 2016 really kind of got people into a frenzy.
In a tizzy? Everybody's up in a tizzy?
And I think that the hyperbole about 2016 in every way is a little ridiculous. I will say that I think the exact opposite. Yet, as I said on the when we did the Gamescast, and I went back and looked at all the games I'd played, which is a shit ton of games I played this year. I was actually surprised by how many good games were released and how hard it was for me to whittle that list down to 10. So I don't necessarily agree, because I think that there were a lot of great AAA games. Doom was great. Uncharted was great. Battlefield was great. Call of Duty was great. People loved Titanfall. I mean, there was a lot of AAA games that people
loved.
For
me, and this is what I talk about.
So I'm a little confused by that.
In the Gamescast, I bring this up and talk about it, I believe, there, is the fact that, for obviously, gaming and gaming taste is all subjective. And for me, like I said in the show, it was an underwhelming, quote-unquote, year. Or AAA wasn't the main focus. I'm with him where for 2015, I felt like getting my top 10 list down was hard, I felt. For 2016, when I was getting up, I had like 3 or 4 overhangs and then honorable mentions. But like 2015 felt like I had a list of 17 that all deserved something and I couldn't possibly do it. And I think that's because, similar to how I think how he's bringing it up here, I'm not a shooter guy, right? And so I liked Titanfall. I appreciate what it did, but okay. And Infinite Warfare was fun. All right. And Battlefield, stories are really cool, but I'm not compelled, and I'm not compelled to remember those. I'm not compelled to play them. I'm not compelled to jump into it. So Uncharted 4 does stand out. And similar to what he's saying for me is the fact that I do think I have more smaller experiences standing. Like Overcooked, right, is my number 2 game of the year. Spoilers for my top 10 list that goes live on Wednesday on the Gamescast.
Already spoiled your list because you put it on Giant Bomb 2 weeks ago.
That's what I do. Can't help me. Giant Bomb wanted me in demand a little bit more than kind of funny, dude. But, you know, that's the whole thing of just there's, I think, you know, when you look at it, it's like I think when I'm thinking about 2016, I'm thinking about Overcooked and Virginia and Sparkade and all this goofy shit, right, that normally would be in 2015 was fucking Metal Gear. There was a AAA game that defined the year for me, and I put the most hours into.
I'll agree that having a mobile game on your list is goofy indeed. The thing that I found so interesting about the list when I was making it was that I had a really hard time cutting it down, and that's why I had a lot of honorable mentions on my list, because there were games where I was like, before I looked at everything, I'm like, surely Headlander is going to be on this list. Headlander, yeah. Great Double Fine game, really, really unique Metroidvania. I really loved that game a lot. Didn't make it. Something like Job Simulator, which I think is a great VR game. And that's actually something I want to talk about too, but I'll get to that in a second. I thought for sure, I love Job Simulator. I think it was really funny and quirky and cute. Thought for sure it would be on the list, didn't make it. Overcooked, I really liked a lot, thought it would be on the list, didn't make it. Like I thought that this was a great year. As I said on the list, like I played such an extraordinary amount of games this year, mm-hmm. that, and like I said, I actually feel like I played an excessive amount of games this year. I don't think you need to play 70 games or whatever in varying degrees. I think that's absurd and I don't want to do that again, but, you know, it made it so that I had a nice little palette to choose from. The one thing that I thought was surprising was that I wanted to spend time with VR this holiday and I couldn't. Like I it's so weird because I think it's such a great piece of technology and I think the games are so fun, that I played. It's just like I was looking at it. I'm like, I got to connect the box, the PS4. Then I got to like get the camera and set it up. Then I have to like recalibrate every 5 fucking seconds.
But I only have an hour to play really before the next thing. So what's the point?
They really have to figure that out. Like that, there are certain things that they're not going to be able to. You got to have to calibrate your stuff and stuff. But just making it easier.
Here's the thing. Do you think it also is just an issue of having a compelling title? There's a lot. I have so many. I have, you know, Robinson and all these things lined up in my VR folder I started doing on PS4, right? That I'm like, ah, oh, man, I want to play that at some point. But it's not like I have to play. Like tonight, Gravity Rush. I can't fucking wait. I'm so stoked to get back into that world, see that story, and play those characters. But these other games, I'm like, oh, cool. I'm going to look around and see a fucking dinosaur and do this. And that'll be cool for a little bit.
You're
going
to fuck a dinosaur?
I look around and see this fucking dinosaur. Oh, okay. If I can take that move wand, though, get it rock hard. Do this and say, hey, Kevin, come suck on this glowing tip. By the way, I call all dinosaurs Kevin. That's not about you, Kevin. Don't file a sexual harassment claim. It's not about you. I say, hey, dinosaur Kevin Coelho, come over here and suck my dick right in front of your dinosaur fiance, Paula.
Call the dinosaur. Wow, that's very similar to...
I mean, I can't help it that that's just how my mind works.
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised by my reaction, like my guttural reaction, being like, I just want to play a normal game. And then just getting sucked into Tomb Raider, I didn't intend on getting sucked in so long. I mean, I played that game for fucking ever. It might even be more than 30. I mean, I just was enamored with it.
Sure.
It was really fun. But that's what I was trying to say before when I'm saying like playing too many games by volume is... You know, because I was, you know, there's some games that were short that I beat. There were some games that I just didn't spend a lot of time with. And there were a lot of games that I spent a lot of time with. And there were games that I beat. And all is like the Tomb Raider experience for me. I was like, this is the way I like to play games. Really spending time with a game, yep, if it's necessary. And then that's why, like, I think Far Cry Primal is going to be the next game that I go back to.
Wow. All right.
Because I restarted Tomb Raider. I got like 5 hours into Tomb Raider a while ago. And then I restarted it from the beginning. And I think I'm probably in a similar position, probably a little farther, actually. In Far Cry.
So. Whatever happened with Hitman Prime? You were ready. Aaron started playing.
Yeah, Aaron's.
So is that what happened? She just ran away with it and you're just watching it?
Yeah, I just watch it. I mean, it's fun. I'm glad I tried it. I'll tell you, like.
Tell me.
Kind of just watching her play it and watch it and booting it up a lot and the ecosystem that they've created. Very compelling justification for why they do episodic content. They really do a nice job at IO of. Like the elusive contracts, whatever they call it, elusive hits or whatever. It's a really cool idea. Like once they're gone, they're gone. That's it. Like and you know that there's the completionist side of a gamer that feels like they need to log in and get these motherfuckers at all these maps. And I see I'm like, oh, and I point out, I'm like, well, there's an elusive target in Sapienza or whatever the fuck it is. And she's, you know, but she's so obsessed with she's like, can't leave Paris. I have all the maps. I got them all.
Yeah.
And she just loves it because she's like trying to get all the challenges and level her character awesome. All the way up. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, there's some obtuse ass shit going on in this game right now. They're having an old fashioned show. You're trying to collapse lights on them. I'm like, you just shoot them right in the fucking face and be done with this. Yeah, no, but it's a cool game. I have no intention of going back to it, but I'm glad I tried it. And I appreciate people giving me those recommendations. That was the thing about that game Dex that I put on Vita, where I was like, when I first was reading about it and looking at videos, and I was like, well, how did no one recommend me this game? No one. I never heard of this game in my life. And then I'm like, oh, that's why.
Now, we hop tracks there. I want to hop back to VR. What I found interesting about you with VR is how, and I thought this is a problem, not in terms of you, but in terms of like when we talk about VR and what it means and its future and all stuff, is how excited you were slash are for Eve Valkyrie, but still have never sat back down to do it since like you talk about it being, that was a religious moment with it. That's the one that got you. And then we even like what you're saying. Well, I don't want to set it up. I don't want to do this. How much time do I have?
It's also, you know, I'll tell you with Eve Valkyrie.
Tell me.
It's a Persona 4 Golden kind of thing. And I'm already feeling it. Like
you're going to save that for the end.
We talked about it, I think, a few episodes ago, but between the soft sales of VR overall, PSVR is the best-selling unit, but and that they didn't reach their expectations, and it seems like some of that has to do with manufacturing issues and all that kind of stuff. I just wonder, is it all just going to fall apart? And if so, I would like to have some things to play. My hope is that that doesn't happen. My feeling is that they won't let that happen, but... It's one of those things where I look at it, I download it. It's just on my console, and I'm just like, you're there, and I want you.
Yeah.
Ooh. I want to be deep inside of you, Eve Valkyrie, but now's not the time.
Now here's the next.
You'll be fertile when I get to you next.
No, it'll be barren. There'll be no fruit left to bear. Here's what we need to talk about. We still have that third bedroom that used to be kind of funny HQ, the studio. We could set up a standing PlayStation VR thing where all we'd ever have to do. Is go in there, plug in our unit, plug in our own headset. We could do that. And then that would eliminate everything. Then we could go in there, we could fuck around.
We could do that. What's probably going to end up happening, though, is I'm buying a drum kit and going to put it in that room.
Okay.
So, But there's plenty of room. That room's more spacious than people give it a lot of credit for.
Agree, agree.
The major problem, because I heard through the grapevine that someone has a pretty nice kit sitting around that they just want to get rid of.
Yeah.
Like a five piece. And so I don't need a five piece. You know, I'm not, you know, I need, you know, maybe a high tom and a four tom and a snare and a bass. I don't need the high tom and the low tom. You know, you understand what I'm saying? I don't need, you know, I don't need two bass drums.
So whatever, are you still going to soundproof this? Because you once talked about that.
So that's the next conundrum.
We got a man downstairs and our landlord upstairs.
I don't care about the man downstairs. The man upstairs is who I care about.
Yeah.
Now, the man downstairs doesn't care about us. He's hawking his loogies and doing whatever he does.
Well, I mean,
throwing his garbage in our garbage can.
Oh, does he do that?
Yeah, you know, I pay for that garbage. You know, it's like, you know, it's all.
I mean, so, he's just living in a coat closet down there, and I'm pretty sure he's on our electric bill anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is too. So that's nice. But I want to look into, is it possible to soundproof the room? Like, is it possible to just make it so that no one hears anything going on in that room? Because then it makes it a very tantalizing way to take you out eventually as well. Now, what I'm more likely going to do is just play it by ear. I just want to have the kit.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe when, you know, the guy upstairs goes on an errand or something like that, he's going to
run in there.
You know, I bang it out.
Go animal style.
Mm-hmm. So no, but that's a fine idea with the VR. I mean, we have like 17 PS4s in the fucking apartment,
right?
So might as well do something with them. But it's possible. Yeah, I want to. I'd like to get back to it. It's such an immersive experience. When I think about the games that I liked on it, you know, Super Hypercube was an awesome game. Even that Headmaster game was interesting. Like, there's other games on there. I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah.
I just. The semantics of it were a bigger turnoff than I had anticipated.
All right.
Once the luster wore off, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then once you start getting pulled into other games, I mean, we're really only probably a month, 5 weeks away from getting Horizon. You know, like there's not, I wouldn't be surprised if Horizon went gold by the end of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to be going back into these games that require you to not use VR. And then then the ball's rolling and all the sorts of shit comes out.
Yeah.
You know, Wildlands and all whatever.
Wildlands. God, I hope that pans out. All right. Good job. Colin.
I didn't do anything, but thank you.
You talked. You did a good job. That was a good conversation. Give me a handshake. We talked. We talked good. We talked good.
We talked good.
Talk good.
Me talk good one day. What was it? Well, there was a book.
David Sedaris.
Sedaris, right.
Me talk pretty one day.
Yeah, me talk pretty one
day. Tell me about what's happening in the Trophy Times.
Well, I was looking at the trophies today. There's only actually I was looking at them all break, and this might have to do with because I go on PSN profiles and basically update it every day just to see what pops. Poppin'. And this might have to do with the fact that you know, there's no drop, there's no games coming out. A lot of the things being put up are Japanese games. Where? Why?
Oh, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Okay, there we go.
Mouse problems.
So, I mean, last we talked, I mean, like, there's just a lot of Japanese games, and then there's a few games that no one cares about that I don't want to talk about. There's one game on here that I'm not even sure what it is, and then there's another game on here that people were excited about. The game that people were excited about was Puyo Puyo Tetris.
I've heard of this. Why do we know about this?
I think it came out in Japan a long time ago.
Okay.
I think it came out in Japan on PS3 and Vita. Yeah, in 2014. Never was brought here, and now it's coming to PS4. And so there's trophies live for that, and I will have you know that it has a platinum trophy.
Woo!
Now, 30 bronze, 9 silver, 3 gold, and a platinum trophy for a Puyo Puyo Tetris. But again, all about combos and scores and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The other game that I don't know what this is, it's a Vita game. It's called The Longest 5 Minutes.
Okay.
50 bronze, 2 silver, 2 gold, and a platinum.
Ooh.
Pixel art looks pretty good. You get different trophies for different endings. RPG level 5, greet Chloe before departing, blah, blah, blah. My theory about this game, not knowing anything about it, because it's all reaching levels and all sorts of things. Do you have only 5 minutes to play the
game? That's what it sounds like.
This is one of the great mysteries.
It'll be answered soon.
So
when the longest 5 minutes comes to PlayStation Vita.
By the way,
maybe it's coming this week. We don't know. Ryan Clement, sleep at the wheel.
Let me see. Yeah, what kind of excuse do you have? Another kid already?
Ryan, come on.
What do they call that when you have, what is it called? What do you call that when you have two kids in the same year? It's an Irish something.
Irish twins,
Kevin. Is that what it is? Irish twins?
No, I don't think that's right.
Anyway. Also, I'll have you know that Danganronpa 3, I believe, comes out like this week or next week in Japan.
Mm.
Could be wrong about that.
You're going to import it, stumble through it, and understand a word?
What am I, Andrew Goldfarb?
Exactly.
What is it called? Is it called? It's not. Everyone gets Mammy. It's not Danganronpa 3. That's an anime.
It's definitely Irish Twins? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Kevin Coelho. Not the same as the dinosaurs that I fuck. That I call Kevin Coelho, but they're different. In Time Machine, a hit PlayStation VR game.
January 12th, it comes out in Japan. I'm very jealous. We'll get it later this year on PS4 and Precious Vita. So yeah, that's basically it. Going on for trophies, nothing new popping. So that I my assumption is nothing new is really coming out anytime soon.
All quiet on the
I will never know front. Because who knows what Ryan Clements is doing right now.
God forbid. I mean, he has a wife. The baby has a mother. You take the baby, you give it to the mother, you fucking update the blog. You just say, here's what's coming out this week, everybody. I didn't bother putting images in because I got to go back to the baby and it's New Year's or whatever. Kids never had any dedication. Lucid Dream wrote in for trophy time, just like you can by going to kindoffunny.com/PSQ and says, trophy time suggestion. Give a shout out to a game with a great trophy list. You guys talk about becoming trophy consultants in order to help developers come up with well-rounded, comprehensive, and balanced lists for their games. More info on that in 2017. And this is certainly an ingenious idea. I think it would help to highlight and identify games that you think have such a list, just in case the consultant thing doesn't pan out. I'd like to suggest that this week's shout-out goes to Doom for not only being one of the best games this year, but for also having one of the best trophy lists I've encountered in a game. Earning the Platinum involves exploring every inch of the game, utilizing all of the upgrade systems and game modes that are introduced, and challenging yourself to complete all of the bonus tasks in each stage. Nothing feels tacked on, repetitive, grindy, or encumbering. Most importantly, the multiplayer trophies are easily acquired, and there are no missable trophies. Id Software nailed it. Thanks, guys. XOXO, Lucid Dream. I like that. I like celebrating things, Lucid Dream, and I'm glad you're doing that.
We celebrate too much. Let's shit on everything. We're in the hyperbolic chamber.
We're in the hyperbolic chamber, Kevin.
Is that right? Hyperbolic chamber? Isn't that where time is slower? We really should have looked an hour chamber. Ago.
Oh, we also I circled when we were so. When I started talking about Hugh, you started laughing and said you'd tell me a story later. Oh, then no. We went on an entire 50 minutes. You said something else that I wanted you to come back to, which reminded me to come back to you.
Hyperbaric chamber.
Okay. He said hyperbaric, but we never. He's.
But I like to live in the hyperbolic chamber.
Well, I do. I definitely think Twitter is Twitter. I was going to say hyperbolic chamber is Twitter. All right. What was your Hugh story that was?
Oh no, I just remember when I was interviewing them because it's a game based on colors.
Color, yeah.
And I remember being like,
this is when you thought you had.
Yeah, yeah. Like I got you. I'm like, so what if you're colorblind?
Yeah.
You know.
And they're like,
what if you're colorblind?
Like we have a color.
And we have that.
Mode.
Yeah. And I'm like, ah,
fuck. When I went through to try to figure out where I was in the game, I got to that final thing and I found my level and I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, wait, why does this guy have symbols all over everything? And I was like, oh, the colorblind mode, right? When Colin got, as they say.
Well, I was happy to hear, because it reminds me of the PSX talk we listened to about accessibility for gamers and gamers that are disabled in some way and can't play. And then obviously Naughty Dog tells that story about how someone couldn't beat Uncharted 2 because of a button mashing thing. And they needed to figure out and overcome that.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that Uncharted 4 was like really one of the pioneering games, or was it The Last of Us? One of Naughty Dog's games that was really pioneering in terms of like, it has like disability options built in, baked in, like they, from the get, so people can play in a way that's best for them. I think that's great. Yeah.
Colin, you ready for reader mail?
Yes.
All right, great. Thanks to Jericho, of course, for compiling this over on the Kinda Funny forums. You can leave your question over at kindoffunny.com/PSQ, the Q's for questions. Let's start with a little segment I'm calling Colin, take him to school. Ice27 writes in and says, Grawlin, Happy New Year. Hope your holiday breaks were great. So I'd like to start with the fact that this isn't an argument, but a genuine question I would like answered. How will the all-digital future really make games cheaper? I understand it cuts out the middleman of the stores, but as a gamer on a budget, I get most of my games after the launch window when prices get cut drastically. Yeah, I get that when The Last of Us Part 2 finally hits store shelves, and I don't want to wait, all the digital systems would probably save me a few bucks. However, most of the time, I don't need to be part of the conversation, and I'll play what speaks to me when I want to. Amazon generally cuts game prices in half around 3 months after release, while the PlayStation Store still has them at full price. Just trying to get some knowledge dropped on me by my boy Colin M. Colin, take him to school.
Well, if you were a Patreon subscriber on Kind of Funny Games, you would have seen the pilot episode. One of the pilots that I wrote of Colin was right. That went up about this. This argument takes a little bit of faith in the market behaving like a market would behave. So the argument is, and markets always behave in predictable ways. So my argument is simply this. If the brick and mortar stores and middlemen didn't need to be placated anymore, and publishers had to release games in a static market in which no one had to, again, fund the people that are trucking the games around, the people that are manufacturing the games around. GameStop has to get their cut, all these kinds of things. Then the only people left to compete with are the other publishers on an even market, right? And my argument is simply this. If EA and Ubisoft and Activision were all like, our games are still $60, and then Warner Brothers was like, our games are $50.
Still AAA, still all the time. Yep. People you expect went into this. It's still an awesome Superman game. It's still an awesome Lego Dimensions. It's whatever, but it's not as much as the other guys.
Right. Then you think that EA is just going to sit there and be like,
eat it,
and just be like, well, we have to do something. And then
remember the last time this happened, of course, a real world example.
Sega and EA.
And EA was like, all right, cool. We'll buy the NFL license so you can't undercut us, right, and put our game out for like, what was it, $25 or whatever.
For people that don't know, back 10 years ago now, I think, Sega Sports was still doing an NFL game, a pretty good NFL game. People would claim that the games were better than Madden.
They were advancing it first person mode, doing a whole bunch of crazy shit.
And Madden was still being released at the time by EA for $50. And I want to say that Sega was releasing the NFL games for $20.
That's what I think too. I remember it being ridiculous. Maybe $20
or $25. This was when the market was still open and the NFL didn't go fully with Madden, and it worked. The Sega games were more beloved. They sold at a higher volume, and it ate into the market share. And market share means mind share. Then suddenly people are talking about, well, what about, we don't have to worry about Madden. Madden is ubiquitous now with NFL games, but it wasn't so. It reminds me of a way that PES or PES, Pro Evolution Soccer, could possibly compete with FIFA on a pricing structure like that as well. The point I'm making, and I think it's, I personally think it's indisputable, I've never heard of a good argument otherwise, is that if the publishers were forced to compete with each other on a digital marketplace in which Sony took its static cut and then they got the rest of the money, is that you would find a situation where, this year's a good example, Battlefield 1 comes out, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare comes out. What if Call of Duty Infinite Warfare was $10 less than Battlefield? Suddenly that's like, well, I might want to play Battlefield a little bit more, but $10, like, that's a lot of money. And so,
and keep in mind, this is already established in this world, this we're talking about, where it isn't the stigma now, right? Where the Ratchet and Clank game comes out and it's cheaper and we're all like, is it a budget game? Is it going to be terrible? And no, it's awesome. We've had tons of success like that. People understand that this is a thing that isn't a big deal.
And I also would argue, and I've argued in the video that some of you saw, if you support us on Patreon, we appreciate you, that the argument can be made that games should be more expensive than $60 too, and I'd be interested to see what that looked like. What I mean by that is, like, you know, if The Witcher 3, which was by all accounts a fantastic game, beautiful game, well-made game, great voice acting, great storytelling, lots to do, very well executed and put together all around. What if their next game, Cyberpunk, comes out in a few years? What if they're like, the game's $100? Would you, like, be aghast by that? Or would you be saying, huh, actually, The Witcher 3 was so fucking huge,
it's all I played for 6 months,
That game might have been worth more than $60, and I might have gotten the best of them, and now they're going to charge $100 for this game. I wonder how we settled on the $60 arbitrary AAA price point. It used to be $50. Yep. But people also have to remember that in the cartridge era, new games went from $40 to $100. So games right now are cheaper than they've ever been when accounting for inflation. But my argument is that by going to the digital infrastructure only, and by removing the brick and mortar and the middleman and the disc manufacturing and all the things that cost money, making the box cost money, making the discs cost money, all that kind of stuff, suddenly, I do believe that publishers will be more likely to compete with each other. And it's not going to happen because they can. If they can keep the money that they're saving, they will. But when one of the publishers forces their hands, they will start competing and prices will fall. I'm telling you, that's what will happen. And I think that's going to happen. And all you have to do is look at Steam. Steam's a vibrant marketplace, although it's turning into a shit show. But it's a vibrant marketplace of competition. And it's not yet a race to the bottom like iOS is. It is certainly turning into that, which is what I'm concerned and have been concerned about. And we'll talk about it, Colin was right soon, about the race to the bottom on the digital marketplaces we actually care about, which is Xbox Live, obviously, and PSN. So I just want you to consider that's an economic reality if the market behaves in a predictable way. And the markets typically do behave in a predictable way. What's a good example? Like cars, like sedans, right? Mm-hmm. Like Toyota and Ford and Hyundai and all of them, really pretty comparable sedans at $30,000. And you look at them and they're like, well, you know, Consumer Reports has pretty good things to say about all of them. And they all have a similar 200,000 mile warranty and all these kinds of things. What's the big differentiator? Oh, Ford just made theirs $5,000 cheaper.
Yeah.
There's the differentiator, you know, and suddenly all the other car manufacturers have to be like, well, we have to do something. And so they start competing. Prices always go down when there's competition. Always. It's the same argument that's being made about opening up state lines to health insurance. Why health insurance prices in the United States are going so high. It's because if you're in California, you can't buy health insurance in New York. You know?
Yeah.
But if you could buy health insurance in New York or Alabama for $10 cheaper, then your insurance here suddenly becomes $20 cheaper because they know they're going to lose you as a customer. It's just the way the market works.
Yep.
So I hope that that explains it. I don't think you're right or wrong, and I don't know if it's ever going to happen. I am very heartened to hear data, end of the year data, saying that digital sales are increasing significantly on consoles. Significantly.
Yeah.
And that's great news.
Colin, take a breather. You took him to school. There, hit the water bottle. There you go. Can't hit the showers yet, but I'm thankful you did it. You lean back. I'll take care of this one from It's That Dave. He says, hey, Greg and Colin. Now, usually this is one we wouldn't do anymore, but we just kind of opened a little bit of Pandora's box with this, so I'm letting it slide. I just listened to the 10 Best Vita Games episode, and I've decided to take the plunge and buy a Vita. I know, fuck my face for getting it so late. I don't know if we'd fuck your face unless you're a dinosaur named Kevin Coelho.
He'll gladly fuck your face if you're a Kevin Coelho dinosaur man.
While the other dinosaur, Paula, watches. But now... Is it a good time for me? What? But now is a good time for me. And I had a few questions for you since some of the stuff online doesn't quite answer my questions. First, if I were to buy a Vita from Japan, because I'm digging that blue one, is it region free? Yes, it is. My pink one is from Japan. I have no problems. Second, when I start my Vita and log in under my name, if I go to the PSN, will it show me all the games that may be crossed by or stuff that I got off of PlayStation Plus over the years, or do I have to search that manually? It wouldn't be on the PSN like you go to the store and find it right there, but when you go to your past purchases, your download list is there, you'll see all your Vita stuff. It is all mixed in with your other shit, which kind of sucks, but...
It should be sequential.
You could also go through... Well, that, but it's...
But then it's all broken.
Yeah, exactly. It's fucked up.
There's a little ellipsis you press when you're in the store on the Vita, and then it brings up a download list. You go to that, and then you hope,
exactly.
you hope and pray that it's
and
there.
If it's all out of order and it's all fucked up, go look... Figure out what you actually want and what you've gone across by and what you've done for PlayStation Plus, and maybe search on the online portal and do it that way and just say download your Vita from there. The help would be appreciated. You got it. Hope you had a good break. We did. Much love, Dave. We love you too, Dave.
Fuck you, Dave.
Whoa, Colin, no! We're turning over a new leaf. Oh, doctor!
Sorry about that.
Let's go. Here, we're going to now move into another reader response. That was a response to our top 10 Vita episodes. We have another reader response from...
Didn't do that episode in New Ray well. You guys aren't really feeling the Vita episodes.
Well, I think it's also just break. All our numbers are down.
Better break. Fucking be.
The third JP wrote into kindoffunny.com/PSQ and says, hi, Colin and Greg. I know you guys did your Last of Us Part 2 theories video a couple weeks ago, but I recently heard a theory about this story that I thought was interesting. There is reportedly, now I take that with a grain of salt. I don't think anyone at Naughty Dog is reporting anything yet, going to be another LGBT character featured in the game. The theory was that the reason Ellie is so angry and going on a murderer spree is because her girlfriend was captured and now she's on a mission to get her back. If this is the case, it would be huge and means so much to so many LGBTQ gamers, parentheses gamers, but spelled gay, to have such a huge game like The Last of Us Part 2 be about a queer story. My question is, how likely do you think this is? Do you think the gaming community is ready to have such a huge game be centered around a queer story? Thanks, John.
Left Behind already was this. I think that it would be a huge, not a mistake, but it would be weird. Like,
to do
like,
it again?
Yeah, like you already did it.
The reportedly, I'm like...
Nothing's reported. No one knows anything about
this. Naughty Dog's great at keeping everything locked up. I don't believe that for a second. How likely do I think it is? I don't think it's likely. Not because of the gay part of it. Again, Left Behind dealt with this. It was awesome. Spoilers for Left Behind. Fuck you, you should have supported him at the time. I think it's more the fact of... That's... Think about how that game has to look. We already know Ellie. We already know Joel. We jump into this game. Time has passed. We have to get introduced to this character. We have to immediately be made to feel that we like her as much as Ellie likes her or loves her, however you want to describe it. And then she has to get ripped away from us, and then we set out on a mission. I think the Joel angle is way more compelling, and it's already done, and the groundwork's laid, and you already have what you feel about those characters from the first one. So if it is that Last of Us 2 is hunting Joel's killers or going after somebody for Joel or something like that, that makes more sense to me than trying to shove all this back in. If Riley from Left Behind was still alive, then I think we'd have a different ball of wax where, okay, now we care about her, and they got separated some other way.
Right.
But that's not how that ended.
I think I mean, here's just the long and the short of it is that I thought what Naughty Dog did with Riley and with Ellie in Left Behind was awesome. And I made the argument at the time when I reviewed it that the game needed no combat. Like, and I was disappointed that there was any combat in it at all. It really should have been about their story and exploring that mall and getting to know each other and getting to know that relationship that sets the scene for who Ellie is by the time she meets Joel. I think that when you, if you try to, you know, I think part of the way we normalize gay characters, the way we normalize having Muslim representation or whatever representation you don't see often in video games or in art is to not pay it much heed. It shouldn't be part of the like the character's DNA. So we know Ellie's gay and that's great. But the reaction now about that should be like, who cares? You know, that's normalizing it. Beating it over the head again by being like, now it's about her conquest in an LGBTQ, you know, situation. It's like, that comes off as pandering now. Like, you guys already did it so artfully. Ellie's gay. She's a gay character, accept it or not. But it's not, it shouldn't define her. Well, and it shouldn't define the game.
Exactly. You know? You're making the great point because the thing was, we all played through The Last of Us not knowing her sexuality, not caring, thinking she was amazing, having a relationship.
It was totally irrelevant.
And then you play Left Behind, you get more context, more color to her character, but it doesn't suddenly make what you just did be like, oh, and if you do have a recoil and disgust that I was, oh my God, there was this gay character I fell in love with, then you have to stop and think that you fell in love with a gay character and that's okay and the gay people are fine. Like, I'm with you in the fact of like, the point of like, how likely do you think the gaming community is ready to have such a huge game be centered on a queer story? I think so.
It already happened.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not the same in the fact of, you know, how numbers drop off. Obviously, more people play The Last of Us than did Left Behind and stuff like that.
Sure, but Gone Home did this, and I mean, this isn't new. This whole drama with Overwatch and the Tracer character and the flying fuck about.
Yeah.
I really do feel that. You know, the acceptance of our gay and lesbian brothers out there, our transgender people and all these kinds of things. A lot of it comes from education, but then acceptance through normalization.
Sure.
Making it a big to-do, I think, is destructive towards the end goal. I think the way that Naughty Dog just did it, in a very subversive kind of way, right? I don't mean that in a negative way, but in a very... You don't really know. Like you're saying, we didn't know Ellie was gay. We didn't care. Ellie was gay. You know, and then she was. And then it gives you context and those kinds of things. There's clever storytelling ways that... So I just want people to be really wary about kind of, you know... there's a place for social justice and then a place for inclusion and there's a place for diversity. But you have to do it in a way that's clever that, you know, because then you have the reactionaries that are like, you're just shoving this shit down our throats instead of just saying like, hey, it's just a portion of who that character is. Your lesbianism or your homosexuality doesn't define you. And it's not really relevant to this story, but that's who she is, which I assume is what's going on with Overwatch. I'm not a nerd, so I don't play that game. Here's,
she kissed a girl in a comic.
Oh, my God.
Now just show me another picture of that fat ass and them tights. I don't mind that. That I got no problem with, this girl's ass being in my face the whole time. But as soon as I find out she's lesbian.
Don't a lot of guys like the lesbian thing anyway? I don't understand what they're so upset about.
I mean, I don't know. They felt like, based on that butt and what they had played in that game, again, this is what I'm getting the scuttlebutt of. I'm not from some fucking dork out there. Oh, man, look at me. I'm taking the fucking calf skid down the thing. Oh, I'm doing it. They were all just mad. They all dreamed of being with her, of course.
Oh, your dreams of being the fictional cartoon character? That's interesting. So to me, I feel like they will have a clever way to go about this story. I don't believe anything I hear about the game. I think everyone's full of shit about it. I don't think Naughty Dog said one fucking word to anyone that's leaked anything about the game. So there's no reporting and there's no rumors about this game. And by the way, you're not going to be playing it for like 3 years.
Boom.
Also.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 years. I don't even remember what I predicted anymore. 2 years. It's 2017 now. So... You'll play it in 2019. But I am very excited to hear more about it. And I like the more subtle ways that things are getting more inclusive. But again, people don't need to be beaten over the head with it because then that causes the negative reactions to it. You have to do it in a way that normalizes it. I think people have to realize that more, and I think they did a nice job with that in Left Behind, and we can expect that Naughty Dog will treat it with care.
And regardless, The Last of Us Part 2 is the main character is a lesbian. Like that, you know what I mean? Like that's what the game is. Master Bronze 12 wrote in kindoffunny.com/PSQ just like you can. It says, hi, Greg and Colin. Happy New Year. My question is regarding first week sales of games. Gravity Rush 2 is on the horizon. I loved Gravity Rush on my Vita, even platinumed it. I really want to buy this game to support it. With its release date in January, I won't be able to play it for at least a month. I was considering not buying it on first week since I won't be able to play it, and maybe in the meantime I can catch a discount. My question is, are first week game sales as important as they used to be? Nowadays, we hear a lot of developers saying they sell the majority of their games when there is a sale, especially on Steam. Software is categorized as high initial fixed cost and low marginal cost, parentheses, low or no reproduction cost. Every sale must count, even if it occurred years after the initial release. Just think how much money games like Fallout 3 or Skyrim, parentheses, now, it has remastered versions, earn developers after its release. I really want to support Gravity Rush 2. I really like the world they built up and want more out of it, this IP. Even if I buy the game 1 month later, it should have the same effect as buying it first week, right? Love from Turkey. And then he does his name here, and it's got a C with a little, it got a little leg on it down there underneath. He says, it's pronounced like tunk, tunuk, tunk. And then he says, P.S., it is Istanbul, Greg. So he's giving me all sorts of information.
Turkey, that kind of turkey?
I think so. He's love from a turkey. The turkey's in Istanbul, I believe, is what he's saying.
That's my best in turkey. We love the turkeys here in the United States.
That's your best one, huh?
What? Yep, that's the turkey running through the woods.
You gotta go to gobble gobble. He like turned it off and threw out the podcast. He's like, I don't need this.
Unsubscribe. Oh, well,
so, no, I mean, do first week sales still matter a lot? They're where it is reported a lot. I don't think you, in the case of Gravity Rush 2, I don't think you have to worry. Gravity Rush 3 is not happening. I don't think Gravity Rush 2 is going to come out of the gate and set the world on fire and establish this as Cat as an indispensable PlayStation character.
No, Gravity Rush 2 is going to bomb. Now here's the...
Says the guy who's super excited to go home and play it. I'm not throwing stones here. I love Gravity Rush.
Saying that the guy who is totally impartial to the series, Gravity Rush 2 is going to bomb. Now here is the interesting kind of thing about it. Gravity Rush 2, you're not going to be able to play it day one. The most money is going to go to Sony if you buy it at $60. If you're buying it at a discount, everyone's getting less money. So if you want to support them dollars to donuts, then you should buy it as soon as possible because Gravity Rush 2 is going to be on sale probably weeks after it comes out. So,
and remember that it's not the number of units moved. It's the amount of profit made.
Right. Sony would rather sell 100,000 copies of Gravity Rush 2 at $60 than 250,000 copies of Gravity Rush 2 at $20. They don't care about the volume. They want the money. So you have to keep those kinds of things in mind. I feel a little bit bad for Sony because I think The Last Guardian's probably bombing too, and Gravity Rush 2. But then we're going to get in the Horizon and Gran Turismo, which are going to obviously do great critically and commercially, I assume. So, but there is some excitement for Gravity Rush. My big disappointment with Gravity Rush is
it jumps systems.
It's just kind of, I don't know, it's just kind of lame. You know, I understand that they don't want to strand it on Vita, but...
But here's my thing.
It was a Vita game.
That's the thing. Is like, again, I liked Gravity Rush when I reviewed it. I'm excited for Gravity Rush 2 tonight. I have missed that world, and I do like those characters. I feel like they're going to look at the numbers it does as Gravity Rush 2 on PlayStation 4, and it's going to be like, all right, cool. Like, not more people bought it, but like, what would have the groundswell of Vita supporters felt like if it just went there again? Hey, we're not out of the AAA Vita game thing. You love Gravity Rush. Here's a Gravity Rush 2. Maybe, and then 6 months from now, put out the fucking collector's whatever PS4 edition if you really wanted to. But how many more copies are you going to sell that you wouldn't have sold on Vita? Vita is the audience of us, the fucking super PlayStation nerds who already have our Vita and buy games in bulk and love this thing and do all these things, who love Gravity Rush based on the Vita game. It's not like I'm hearing people, I never picked up that Gravity Rush on Vita, but it's coming to PlayStation 4 now. I'll check it out. And I'm sure it's going to happen.
It's a chicken and the egg thing. Yeah. That's why I understand that Gravity Rush Remastered came in the PS4, but I'm sure no one bought it. That similar to Tearaway Remastered, which might as well have never happened at all. So
Tearaway was not remastered. It was a different game altogether.
No, I hope not, because that was so waste of your time. But the thing about Gravity Rush 2 is that I'm sure it's going to be a great game. And I'm sure people are going to love it. But it is unfortunate that it is coming out in early January. It is unfortunate that its sequel is not, I don't want to say readily accessible, but not within the mind share. Like, this is a game that maybe didn't need to happen at all, but we'll see how it all goes.
Yeah, maybe it gets the Dying Light treatment and all the people like, oh man, there's nothing to play.
Absolutely love that for that to happen. I hope I'm totally wrong that it's gonna bomb, but I'll be interested to see. I'm super interested to see MPDs for December to see how Last Guardian did as well, although I don't know that Sony reports digital numbers. So the numbers are going to be.
But it'll be. Oh, we wouldn't have numbers. Yeah, yeah. It'll be.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was on the chart at all.
Let's see digitally how well it's sold on, you know, the breakdown of that chart.
Yeah.
On,
so
on the blog, if Ryan Clements ever comes back from vacation.
Well, he's having Irish children, apparently. So.
Jeez. God. He's not even Irish.
I know. That's so weird about it. I'm sorry. What is that? Irish.
He's having Irish children.
Well, there's more to the story than meets the eye.
His Indian wife is Irish. It's very bizarre, but
you see black people every once in a while having sort of Maury Povich. They have a white child. Then there's a thing where the woman thinks the guy is there's someone's cheating on someone or whatever, but it actually is just a pigmentation problem. It happens.
Oh, they do the you're not the father thing. Yeah. And you are the father.
Do you remember when Maury Povich had other things?
Yeah, I do.
And then suddenly...
What does Connie Chung think of all this?
Connie Chung's like, oh, fuck.
When he comes home and he's like, this is what happened on the show today. We filmed 7 of these today.
I believe Connie Chung was on the 30 for 30 about Tanya Harding.
She was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Could have been another Asian woman, but I think it was Connie Chung. No,
I'm pretty
sure
you're right about that. That checks out. That checks out, I think. At least what I remember. Colin, final question.
Yes.
Comes from Zara N. He or she says, hello. Has the PlayStation Vita been discontinued?
No.
It seems like every store in Sweden is out of stock and has been for a while. With small amount of research, I see a similar pattern across Europe. Seems stupid to discontinue a product when new games are still coming out on a regular basis. Can this just be a stock issue or has Sony really decommissioned it?
Well, they definitely didn't decommission it in Japan. So my assumption is that they're probably working through whatever stock they have here. It's not discontinued. It is hard to find, but they still sell a ton of them in Japan. So what I'm saying is that the unit's not discontinued. And worst comes to worst, you're just going to have to go buy it from Japan. But
I think what's really happening is, yeah, retailers aren't supplying it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
People hit us up all the time, like the ghost town of like your Walmart or Target where there's nothing there and there's like one game. I think it's just that no one's reordering them because no one's coming in to buy them and they're bitching the wrong people. And like, isn't it Amazon? You can't get it new anymore. You can just get refurbished ones or people who are
something like that.
Selling used ones or whatever. I think it's just that fact of like, these are businesses. They're not going to keep everything on the shelves just to have it. No one's coming in asking for it, and that's the trouble.
I will say that if you're interested in a Vita, really like interested in having one, I would act soon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Colin. You ready to meet your best friend for the week? This is PS I Love This Best Friend XOXO. It's where one of you beautiful bastards writes in, gives us your PSN, we read it, then you get all sorts of fun friend requests and you get people to play games with and you get nice messages on the PSN. Everybody's all the best friends are happy and they have a great year and no one cries. This one comes from Anth Anonymous. Hey, Colin and Greg. So last week, someone posted their PSN hoping to get help with some trophies. I figured it would be nice to do the opposite and offer help. There will be a lot of new Guardians in Destiny needing help with this game, and it can be very overwhelming at the start. I've got hundreds of hours logged. If anyone needs anything Destiny-related, parentheses, or any other game for that matter, let me know. My PSN name is Anth Anonymous. That's A-N-T-H Anonymous, all one word. P.S., my fiance couldn't find me a PSVR for Christmas, so she bought me an electronic drum kit instead. I figured you want to know that. Timely, as we talk about a VR room or a drum room.
Electric kits are...
Now, don't be all poo-pooing it. You always talk about maybe getting that for the house.
I know, but like they're just not right.
I understand that, but you're in San Francisco. You have neighbors.
There's a lot not right here, actually.
Yeah, that's true. So, that's true.
That's a good point. Oh, yeah, I have neighbors, too. That's true.
ReaperWolf91 has this week's Forgotten PlayStation game. He or she writes in and says, hey, Colin and Greg. Long time, first time. I recently got a perfectly legal PlayStation 1 emulator on my cell phone, and I may or may not have downloaded a few ROMs for gaming on the go. If, hypothetically, I got some ROMs, I would get some of my favorite games that I had for my physical PS1 back in the day. For the same reason, I recently may have reconnected with the game I'd like to suggest for Forgotten Game of the Week. Tiny Tank Up Your Arsenal was a game released by Sony Interactive Entertainment and developed by Appaloosa Interactive and now, parentheses, which I haven't heard of since, back in 1999. It was right around the time Jennifer Lopez was Waiting for That Night. The game was funny and surprisingly easy to pick up. It was about a yellow little battle tank with the spirit of a Rottweiler trying to stop the main villain from removing the Earth's atmosphere, so it was more suitable for our new machine overlords. I especially enjoyed teaching the mechanics of the game to my younger brother back in 1999 and challenging him in the multiplayer for hours on end. The little yellow tank had a ton of great and hilarious quips, which I still use to this day. Unfortunately, I've never met another person who remembers or even knows about the game. Have either of you played this forgotten game? If so, thoughts? Reaper Wolf says, thank you. P.S. I love you guys a long time because your podcasts are long, you see. Have you played Tiny Tank up your arsenal? Man.
No, I haven't.
Me neither. Never even heard of it.
It could be a made-up game for all I know.
Sure, probably. I mean, I Wikipedia him usually. Didn't this week, but some. I assume he's not that smart to write in. And I mean, he's Reaper Wolf.
He could be smart. He's going to be a smart man.
Tiny Tank up your arsenal. Maybe it's like a current game and he does it and then people buy it and then he makes $1 million.
You got us.
Fucking nailed us. Let's check in with the PSN's worst name of the week. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, you can't change your PSN name because Shuhei Yoshida hates you. So what you do is you go to the Kinda Funny forums over at kindoffunny.com/forums. You go to the PSN's worst name of the week list. You submit yours. And we read it on the air. Now, I think I'm doing another one where I'm bending the rules a bit with this one, but here we go. This one comes from Char B. Tronic. That's not his PSN name. That's just a bad Kinda Funny forum name that he chose for some reason. Hey, Colin and Greg. First time, long time. So I just started a new job the other day, and I was talking about video games with the guy who sits next to me, and he told me the story of how he got his current PSN name. When the PS3 came out long ago, he bought one early and created his initial account. He mostly played Call of Duty Online at the time, never had an issue with it. A couple years later, his name was reported after playing a game of MLB The Show, and his account was locked out. He had to call PlayStation support to fix it. The call support asked what his name was, and he responded, Vag Punisher. All one word, Vag Punisher. He loved having this name. He recalls hearing his friends' girlfriends on the mic asking, who's the Vag Punisher? And he would respond, yeah, let her and all her friends know. Support forced him to change his account name, and not knowing that he could change it again on his own, he came up with a generic name. Colin might like this one, Patriots4_, which he now regrets choosing. Please, Shuhei, let us change our names. Thanks, guys. Keep Vag good
Punisher,
work.
That's a good one.
Char B. Tronic. I like that. It's like a double whammy. Because Vag Punisher, funny and stupid, but dumb. And then he gets Patriots4_. That's what he got. You're a big Patriots fan, aren't you?
They're going to lose.
Are they?
Yes. In the divisional round.
Okay.
To... the Chiefs.
Oh, okay. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this has been PSI Love You XOXO. It is kindoffunny.com's PlayStation podcast. It is the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet. And it posts every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, rain or shine, on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe. Remember, if you ever go to your podcast service around the globe at, say, like 9:15 a.m. Pacific time and it's not up, it might be because I'm on vacation and you should tweet me like the one guy did. And then I immediately published it and it was great. But, you know. Sometimes it's just, no, I can't auto. You can't auto publish on SoundCloud. Really annoying. Really annoying. Every episode of PSI Love You XOXO ends in a song in a segment we call Singing to Shuhei. This is where one of you talented motherfuckers goes to kindoffunny.com/PSM and you give me your MP3 so I can play it at the end of our MP3. You give me your YouTube link so I can annotate to your YouTube video at the end of our YouTube video. This one comes from Greg. Greg says, hi, Greg. Greg here. He has two G's in his name, though, so it's not going to be too confusing. Long time, first time. A lot of long time, first times today. My best friend, Neville
Chamberlain.
Barton. No, oh, okay. Sadly, I know. And I write music. Both of us play guitar, but he is the mastermind audio engineer who plays lead guitar in addition to programming drums, bass, synths, etc. Here is a track from 2 years ago called Interstellar on the long gestating but finally upcoming in 2017 album. You can find a handful of other tracks on SoundCloud at Nevin Michael. Nevin Michael. Now here's where I usually spell it out because there's some funny spellings, but here's where you fucked up, Greg, with two G's. I need your MP3 and YouTube video. Your MP3 I can download. You didn't give me an MP3 I can download. You just linked me your SoundCloud that has no download button or anything. Some of you guys give me the SoundCloud link and I go there and you want my money. I usually give it to you. But I'm saying, guys, it'd be easy if I could just download them. If I could just click a download button. So if you want to find out where the song is, SoundCloud, Nevin Michael, one of those words is spelled funny. They smell funny too, I'm sure. Like the dinosaurs I fuck named Kevin Coelho in Time Machine VR. This is probably more up Colin's alley, is we're a metal/degent?
Gent.
Okay. Gent band. Is the D supposed to be there? Or is that a
Yeah.
Okay. What does that mean? Okay, but don't fret. No pun intended. You might enjoy it too. P.S. I work with Brian, Aaron's sister's boyfriend, and he can vouch that I wear kind of funny gear at least 4 out of 5 days a week while my coworkers constantly ask, what's with the smiley face?
I know who this guy is.
You know this Greg with 2 G's?
I know the Greg with 2 G's.
Okay.
Yes. Not personally, but I've heard of him.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Nevin Michael. That's the SoundCloud. And his friend Greg with 2 G's who don't understand how to let you download things off SoundCloud. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.